At one time, David Kasserat thought he wanted to be an ER doctor, but once in medical school, he quickly realized that world wasn't for him at all. Instead, he became a palliative care physician. He helps patients who are very ill or at the end of life. So he spent a lot of time thinking about the transition between life and death and has written a new book on techniques that seemingly create a path from one to the other. In Shocked, Adventures in Bringing Back the Recently Dead, Kasserat describes the evolution of modern resuscitation techniques, and it's nothing like we've all seen on Baywatch.
I have no pulse.
Compressions, Caroline, ventilations.
One and two and three and four and five.
Still no pulse.
Keep going. First
and
analyze.
Clear.
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 She's shockable.
Good shot.
Shocking.
I have a pulse. She's breathing.
What happens on TV is very clean and very pristine and very, very effective. And CPR in real life is none of those things. CPR in real life involves pushing on somebody's chest, often pushing hard enough to break ribs, breathing either through a tube or sometimes using mouth to mouth, and then repeated shocks to the chest that the patient doesn't feel because he or she is unconscious. But it's very aggressive. People who have seen CPR for the first time often describe it as looking almost violent.
How many patients are resuscitated in this fashion in a given year?
It depends on where you are and what you're talking about, but easily a couple hundred thousand probably in the United States alone.
And what is roughly the success rate?
Well, it depends. If you're watching television, if you're watching Baywatch, the success rate is
100%.
Or probably 60 or 70%. It's unfortunately not nearly that good in real life. The other thing we see on television is that when people revive, they revive immediately and they go back to doing whatever it is they're doing. And in reality, it's not nearly that clean or effective. It depends on where you are. Cardiac arrest in a nursing home, in an older person with many health problems, those patients might only have a 1 or 2% chance of returning to where they were before the cardiac arrest. In other situations, particularly if there's an automatic external defibrillator handy, sort of a shock in a box that's present in train stations or shopping malls, your chances of being resuscitated might be as high as 1 in 3, but still a long way from the two-thirds that television tells us about.
You describe in the book the history of how we learned about resuscitation. So what were some of the early efforts and how did they get refined?
It's safe to say that back in the 1800s, people tried pretty much everything you can think of, from tickling people with feathers to beating them with whips to putting their feet in boiling water to one of my own personal favorites, which is to take a drowning victim and throw him over the back of a trotting horse. In Shocked, I actually tried that to see what it would feel like. I described that in gruesome detail. Suffice it to say, it's not something that your listeners would want to try at home.
And then when did we become serious about it? When did we really make advances?
Well, it's interesting. We actually started to make advances way back in the 1800s, although we didn't necessarily realize it then. One of the oddest techniques of resuscitation back then was something called somewhat ominously the Russian method, which involved burying people in snow or ice. And that's an interesting technique because if you cool people, it makes it harder to start their hearts again. On the other hand, the colder you are, the slower your metabolism is. And the slower your metabolism is, the longer you can survive in periods of not having enough oxygen without significant brain damage. So cold is something that many CPR studies are starting to use today to try to chill people, often to very, very cold temperatures, to try to protect brains and other organs.
But the issue, I guess, you raise in your book is that saving the life is great right there in that moment, but then there's often some kind of fallout on the other side. So describe that big question a bit.
It's an interesting question that many of my patients have had to deal with. I'm a hospice doctor. I take care of patients near the end of life. And many of my patients have had to make these sorts of decisions. Many people have decided they want aggressive treatment. They wanted to be resuscitated. And many of them have been brought back to life, but brought back to life in a condition that they really didn't want to be in. In Schacht, I use the example of the mythologic story of Tithonus, who mythology tells us asked Zeus for immortality, but forgot to ask for eternal youth. And so he stayed alive. He couldn't die, but he continued to get older and sicker and more frail. And to some degree, that's what we're able to do for a lot of the patients that I take care of. We're able to fix simple problems. We're able to restart a heart often, but we can't cure the underlying vascular disease or heart disease or dementia that caused them to get in that situation in the first place.
David Casaret has written Schacht, Adventures in Bringing Back the Recently Dead. He's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine.